Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hungry Planet right after this. Well, biotech beans, chemical corn, frankenfish, and pesticide potato. That's what's on the menu at your local neighborhood supermarket. And we are concerned that this technology is a serious threat to our health, to traditionally bred open-pollinated seeds, and to the environment and to the farmers that grow them. Listen to this quotation from the Chicago Tribune, which said, quote, "We are being exposed to one of the largest uncontrolled experiments in history. In less than 5 years, these companies have flooded the marketplace with thousands of untested and unlabeled products containing foreign genetic material, and these genetically modified organisms pose several real dangers because they have been engineered to create novel proteins that retard spoilage, produce their own pesticides against insects, or allow the plants to tolerate larger and larger doses of weed killers," unquote. And you know, what's really scary about all of this is that this is not from Tom Clancy's latest thriller. These seeds are already a major part of the U.S. corn and soybean crop. So what happens if one of these so-called suicide genes, which prevent seed saving, goes haywire and, say, destroys the entire U.S. corn crop? Or what if it turns out that genetically modified rice kills people? Or what if it causes genetic mutations or birth defects in people like thalidomide did back in the 1950s? Well, I don't want to take that risk, and I don't want to be a guinea pig in this ill-advised experiment. And I'm betting that you probably don't want to either. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining. And it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our school, the $100,000 class, is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD right there, georgegordon.org. All right, we've been talking about Hungry Planet. It's a book written, the guy that wrote it, I'll give you his name here. It's Peter Menzel, M-E-N-Z-E-L, and a co-author, Faith D. Aluisio, D-A-L-U-I-S-I-O, called Hungry Planet. It's kind of a sleeper book. It's a pictorial book, not the kind of book that we normally review here on the Law Hour. When I see these pictorial books, they're interesting. They're kind of fun to read, but they don't usually contain the kind of hard science or hard evidence or value that I ascribe to the real journalism. That is, real hard-hitting, this is what we need to know. This is something that we can all benefit from. Now, the other day I said I thought we got this at Barnes & Noble. We didn't. We got it from Baker Creek Seeds, so write that down. It's Baker Creek Seeds. Now, remember, that's the outfit that handles the open-pollinated heirloom seeds. If you want to go to their webpage, it's called heirloomseeds.com. Simple enough, heirloomseeds.com. They're in Mansfield, Missouri. Now, the book itself is divided into 30 chapters, or 30 stories, of 30 different families living in different countries around the world, and how much food do they eat in a week, and what is it that they're eating? Now, I reported in the previous two programs here, for instance, the Germans and the French, those two families living in the cities, dependent upon the food supply being brought to them, insofar as subsistence and survival is concerned, as we enter into the Great Tribulation period. Those people are history. Those people are toast. As they say, they haven't got a snowball's chance in hell of surviving what's coming down upon us. Now, it is true that 10% of mankind, 10% of Earth's population, will survive this. We know that because God Himself told us so in Isaiah 6, verse 13. And we're reasonably certain that the powers that be, the Illuminati, who have said that they intend to reduce the Earth's population by 90%, aren't going to kill everybody. They want to save 10% of them alive. Now, the Messiah made quite a little story, or quite a little statement here. It's in Matthew chapter 24, when He said that there would come a time when, if He didn't step in to intervene, no flesh would be saved alive on planet Earth. He repeated that in Mark and Luke. It says here, and except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake those days shall be shortened. 1 John 2:18 has a little more to say. Ezekiel 5 verse 9 tells you a little bit more about nuclear bomb war, and what it is that we're trying to prepare for, and what it is that we're expecting. Now, one of the events coming down upon us is famine. But famine isn't the only big problem that we have. In fact, we have 12 problems, and any one or two of these problems in tandem could spell the end of civilization as we know civilization to be today. Now, civilizations have come and gone in the past. The Egyptian civilization rose up, became great, and then collapsed, and it disappeared. And Hitler's Germany, the Third Reich, arose, lasted for a while, and then was destroyed, and it disappeared. Only one time in the history of mankind have we seen a worldwide collapse of civilization, and that was right after Noah's flood. Now, there's only one other time foretold in Bible prophecy that tells us that the entire civilization worldwide is going to collapse. That is, be so altered that it's unrecognizable. That the entire system is going to break down and cease to function. And that's called the Great Tribulation or Jacob's Trouble, which is brought out in some 30 prophecies here in the Scripture, both Old and New Testaments. Now, of course, most people in the world believe in evolution. They certainly don't believe in the Bible, and they're not concerned at all about this potential collapse. So we're not trying to reach those people per se. We're not trying to convince those people that they're incorrect and that they need to change so that we can save them. I'm not here to save anybody. So if somebody, you know, writes me a letter and says, gee, Mr. Gordon, we're real pleased with your program and your timely message, and you're trying to save us, forget that. I don't really care whether you live or die. If you want my personal opinion, I don't know you. And as Joe Stalin so aptly put it, he said, when one person dies, that is a tragedy. But when a million people die, that, he said, is a statistic. And I think that that's just about correct. When my dad died, it was a tragedy, but when we're talking about a million people dying of famine or starvation, for instance, this year, in the year 2010, 20 million people are going to die from starvation or the complications that come from it. I don't know any of those 20 million people. They're nothing to me. It's just a number. I can't do anything to save them, and I'm not going to do anything to harm them. But the events of history and the events of the real world out there spell out 20 million deaths a year. So I take a look at that and I say, well, now what can I learn from that? Because I don't want to be one of those 20 million. When I take a look at Bible prophecy and it tells me that 10% of the earth's population will be saved alive and 90% are going to die, my inclination is to be among the 10% of the survivors. Kind of like riding on the Titanic. I'm really not so concerned about the 1,500 that are going to die tonight. I'm real concerned about being one of the 806 that's going to survive this tonight. What do I have to do to be one of the survivors? Now, that's why we're on the air, and that's what we're trying to accomplish. If, in fact, you're one of those survivors, and if, in fact, you can take the warning in advance, do something intelligent and constructive with it, maybe this will be of some value to you. So if you got a pen and paper, write this down. I'll give you the 12 events, or the 12 signs of the times that tell us that the world's civilization is on the verge of collapse. We read it in Matthew 24. It's contained in Mark 13 and Luke 21. Sometimes people will say to me, well, are you trying to save the religious people? No. I showed you that in the last program. I said the religious people don't need a physician. They're already saved. Just ask them. Are you saved, brother? Oh, yay, Lord, I'm saved. Past tense. You don't need to tell him to do something different to protect himself or save his skin. He's already saved. So we don't need to warn those guys. The guys that we're looking at here are those people that aren't saved and those people that aren't evolutionists and have an open mind and say, things don't look too good out here. Let me see whether or not I fit into this category or not. Here's the 12 categories. Monoculture. That is the use of one, two, three, or four plants to grow crops. Monoculture versus agriculture can spell the collapse of civilization worldwide. Soil destruction can spell the collapse of civilization worldwide. Vaccination. Number four, fiat paper currency. Number five, 38-day food supply. It's woefully inadequate. War, and we'll see this in Matthew 24, verse 6. Food supplies down to 38 days. We read about that in Matthew 24, verse 7. Number seven, disease. We see that in Matthew 24, verse 7. Number eight, deception. Matthew 24, verse 4. Jerusalem, number 9, compassed with armies. Luke 21, verse 20. Number 10, 50% of the population of the earth lives within 30 miles of the seacoast. You'll see that in Mark 13, verse 14. That is a cause of and spells the collapse of civilization. Number 11, earthquakes, volcanoes, and weather upsets. In Matthew 24, verse 7. And then number 12, a sunspot Carrington effect, it's an EMP event, could spell the collapse of civilization. Five of these can do it by themselves. Let me run through the list again. Monoculture, that is the planting of crops in huge areas with just one, two, three, or four varieties of seeds. Monoculture can spell the end of civilization. Number two, the destruction of the soil through chemical agriculture. Number three, vaccination. Number four, fiat paper currency. Number five, 38-day food supply, famine, Matthew 24, verse 7. Number six, war, Matthew 24, verse 6. Seven, disease, Matthew 24, verse 7. Eight, deception, Matthew 24, verse 4. Nine, Jerusalem encompassed with armies, Luke 21, 20. 10, 50% of the population of planet Earth lives within 30 miles of the coastline, Mark 13, verse 14. Number 11, earthquakes, volcanoes, and upset weather as a result, Matthew 24, verse 7, can precipitate the collapse of civilization worldwide. And number 12, a sunspot, Carrington effect, EMP event. Five of these can do it by themselves. Here's the number ones that you put by. Number one, monoculture, could do it by itself. Number four, fiat paper currency can cause a collapse of the world civilization by itself. War, thermonuclear war, number six, can do it all by itself. That's a number one. And earthquakes, volcanoes, and weather, number 11, can do it all by itself. Number 12, the sunspot Carrington effect, the EMP event, number one, it can do it all by itself. Now, the others require two or more of these events to occur simultaneously. For instance, soil destruction will not destroy civilization of and by itself, but in combination with monoculture, or in combination with fiat paper currency, or in combination with war, can do it. So you put a number two by soil destruction. Takes two or more in combination. Vaccination, you put a number two. Food supplies, 38 days, you put a number two. Disease, wouldn't do it by itself, but in combination with one or more of the others, it can produce worldwide collapse of civilization. Number eight, deception. Put a number two. Deception in combination with any one or more of the other events can spell the end of civilization. Number nine, Jerusalem encompassed with armies that we see in Luke 21, verse 20. That's a number two. And finally, half the people living within 30 miles of the seacoasts. That's a number two. Now, with that in mind, when we look at this book called The Hungry Planet, there were, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, out of the 30 that I said were worth learning from. And I'm going to give you one of those right now. Here comes the next one. Mali, M-A-L-I. A family called the Natomos, N-A-T-O-M-O-S, of Koa-Koaru, spelled K-O-U-A, K-O-U-R-O-U. And there's 15 of them in this family. Now, they've got a family portrait, and they're taking their picture here. There's 8 adults, 7 children, 15 people in the family, and they have the entire week's worth of food sitting out on a mat in front of them on top of their roof. They live in a mud house, the Natomi family, on the roof of their mud brick home in Koa-Koaru, Mali, with a week's worth of food. The cooking method is wood fire. The food preservation is natural drying. Favorite foods? The Natomo family doesn't think in terms of favorites. They have 3 sacks of grain. Now listen to what they're eating here. These 15 people are going to live for 7 days, 21 meals, on 66.2 pounds of dried corn, 44.1 pounds of millet, and 44.1 pounds of smoked rice. They're going to use 1.1 gallon of sour milk. They're going to use a little bit of meat, fish, and eggs for flavoring. The dried fish is 4.4 pounds, used in fish and okra soup when the family can afford it. Otherwise, they have soup with okra only. In fruits, vegetables, and nuts, they're going to eat 5.5 pounds of tomatoes, 4.4 pounds of okra, that's dried, onions, fresh, 2.2 pounds, onions dried, 1.1 pound, red peppers dried, 14.1 ounce. Tomato paste canned, 14 ounces, not a common purchase, although they like to buy it when they can afford it. No fruits were in season at the time this photograph was taken. In season, they have mangoes from the 10 trees planted by Sumana's father. Oranges from the market are also purchased if they can afford them. condiments, vegetable oil, 1.1 gallon, salt, 5.5 pounds, tamarind, 2.2 pounds, white sugar, 7.3 ounces, some bula, which is a spice from the Nera tree pods, 1.1 ounce, used as a bouillon for soup, mixed with hot pepper and dry onion and cooked with smoked rice. Prepared food is only 30 cents. It's called Magi, M-A-G-G-I, bouillon cubes, 2.1 ounce, and the family purchased this, but they normally use the traditional sambola. Homemade food, Ngombe, N-G-O-M-E, approximately 4 pounds, thick fried cake made of millet flour, water, vegetable oil, and an inadvertent bit of sand. Beverages, water drawn from the community well for drinking and cooking. Now listen to this, because this is what's important to all of us. These people live on $26.39 American per week. They have 15 members in their families. This guy, Somana Natomo, 46 in blue, sits flanked by his two wives. So he's a polygamist. He has two wives. This is a black family living in Mali, M-A-L-I, in Sahel of Africa, in the desert country. All of them look well-fed. All of them are well-dressed. There's no famine here at all. And then they feed this family on 8 cents per meal per day. And so put another way, that's 8.08 times 15 is $1.20 a day. Now remember, I mentioned to you last time that the world has about 1 billion people in it now that live on $2 a day. And this is a family that lives on $1.20 a day for food and feeds everybody. Now the reason that that's very important is that here in America, the three American families that we see here in the story or in the book, they feed their families on $1.89 per meal, and a black family of four living in South Carolina costs them $4.07 per meal per day. If the black family in South Carolina of four people spend $4.07 per meal per person, compare that with 8 cents per meal per person. The black family in South Carolina is history. They're toast. They do not know how to live on 8 cents per meal. It isn't that they can't learn. It isn't that they can't do it. It's that their ignorance, their deception, is at a level where their history, their toast, they're never going to make it. In a pinch. Now, as I've said before, as long as the world continues on the way it is today, those people don't have a care in the world. But if this thing turns turtle, the people in Mali have a better chance at survival than the people in South Carolina. Now that's what the bottom line is all about. And that's why this Baker Creek seed is very important to everybody here. One of the events, one of the characteristics that I noted here in the book is that these people live in the countryside, that is most of the good ones here, the good examples, live in the countryside, in which they're able to produce some, if not all, of their own food. It is not in the hands of some third or fourth party. Now let me give you an illustration of this story. Surging costs hit food security in the poorer nations. Joe McDonald, this is an Associated Press business writer, he said families from Pakistan to Argentina to the Congo are being battered by surging food prices that are dragging more people into poverty, fueling political tensions, and forcing some to give up eating meat, fruit, and even tomatoes. Scraping to afford the next meal is still a grim daily reality in the developing world, even though the global food crisis that dominated headlines in 2008 quickly faded in the United States and other rich countries. With food costing up to 70% of family income in the poorest countries, rising prices are squeezing household budgets and threatening to worsen malnutrition, while inflation stays moderate in the United States and Europe. Compounding the problem in many countries, prices hardly fell from their peaks in 2008, when global food prices jumped in part due to a smaller U.S. wheat harvest and demand for crops to use in biofuel production. Now, Majideen Begum, a Pakistani mother of five, said that a bag of flour for bread, the staple of her family's diet, costs three times what it did 2 years ago in her hometown of Multan, Pakistan. She can no longer afford meat or fruit. "My domestic budget has been ruined," said Begum, age 35. Now, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization's Food Price Index, which includes grains, meat, dairy, and other items in 90 countries, was up 22% in March from a year earlier, though still below 2008 levels. In some Asian markets, rice and wheat prices are 20 to 70% above the 2008 levels, it says. Let me pause here and make an observation. In markets where the prices are 20 to 70% higher than they were in 2008, remember, those people were making $2 a day in 2008. They're still making $2 a day today. And as this lady says, hey, I'm unable to make ends meet. Well, if you were to go to somebody like the family in Mali, and take a look at what they buy to feed 15 people and how much it costs them per person, per meal, per day. I would contend that if you can do it in Mali, you can do it in Pakistan, you can do it in San Francisco, you can do it in New York, you can do it in Los Angeles. Now, you're going to sit there and say, we don't want to live like that. Well, I don't blame you. Shucks, I don't want to live like that either. First of all, I don't even like rice. I don't know about millet. I do like corn, you know, to a degree. But if push ever comes to shove, I now have in my hands the diet that these people in Mali live on and thrive on. And if they can do it for 8 cents per person per day in Mali, by God, little Georgie Gordon can do it in Isabella, Missouri. And I may have to. And if I have to, that's exactly what I'm going to do. But I'm not going to be sitting out here moaning and complaining about, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have any more McDonald's to eat, no more Coca-Cola. I want you to notice, these people don't even have Coca-Cola or McDonald's on the fare. There may not even be a McDonald's or Coca-Cola in Mali, I don't know. That's how poor the country is. But the moral to the story is, these people can survive on 8 cents a day. Now, there's other people around the world that are surviving in city environments. Now, mind you, not just out in the countryside, but in the city environments. And they do it on numbers like 46 cents, 29 cents, 47 cents, 8 cents, 40 cents, 29 cents, 67 cents, 45 cents, 13 cents, 19 cents, 82 cents, 38 cents per person per day. If the people in Ecuador, Bhutan, Chad, China, Egypt, Guatemala, Mali, Mongolia, the Philippines, and India can do it, we can do it. Furthermore, since God Almighty Himself says this is what we're going to do, this is what I'm going to put you people through in this great tribulation, this famine. This little story here appears in Revelation chapter 6. Let me see if I can flip over here quickly to Revelation chapter 6
And listen to this. Where he says, I saw the Lamb, and he opened one of the seals, and I heard as it were the noise of thunder, and one of the four beasts saying, you come and see. And I saw, and beheld, a white horse. And he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. That first seal is revealed in Matthew 24, verses 4 and 5, verse 11, and 23 through 28. First seal deals with deception. And one of the deceptions here is that, hey, listen, when your food prices double, you can't make it again. And I'm sitting here saying, oh, yeah, your food prices can double. And yes, you can feed a nutritious diet to your family, just like the people in Mali and Bhutan and Guatemala and India and in Mongolia and the Philippines and so on. If they can do it there, we can do it here. Even though we don't like it, doesn't taste good, and it doesn't have Coca-Cola to wash it down with, does not mean that we can't make it. Now, the big one over here is in verse 5, where it says, and when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, come and see, and I beheld in the black horse, he that sat upon him had a pair of balances in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, a measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny, and see that you hurt not the oil and the wine. That's famine, described in Matthew 24, verse 7. Matthew 24 is the explanation, or the key to the explanation, of the events of Revelation chapter 6. Remember, the scripture is written in code, so if we decode it, code plead it out. Use legal analysis. All of a sudden, we see what's coming down, and we say to ourselves, well, I want to be on the surviving side. I'm not going to prevent the famine, but I'm going to roll with the punches. And when the famine comes, I'm not going to starve to death because I'm standing on principle or because I'm ignorant, deceived, unable to make a rational decision. I know what to do and I know how to do it. And we'll be back with more after I give you the mid-course reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page and download it right there, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, these beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book, Hungry Planet, a pictorial book, probably a pricey one at that. I'm guessing $30. Well worth the $30, I'm just guessing. If it cost you $50, it's well worth the $50. Well worth the $50. Here's why. There are 12 examples out of 30. What percentage is that? 12 divided by 30 is 40%. Of the stories in here directly affect your ability to subsist and survive, to avoid famine, by learning how these people in such diverse places as India, Greenland, the Philippines, Mongolia, Mali, Guatemala, Egypt, Cuba, China, Chad, Bhutan, and Ecuador can feed their families on as little as 8 cents, 46 cents, 29 cents, 47 cents, 40 cents, 67 cents, 45 cents, 82 cents, 38 cents, 13 cents, or 19 cents per person per meal. Now, here in the United States, to feed one person at McDonald's takes about $4 or $5. When you go into McDonald's and you ordered, you know, a Big Mac, fries, and a milkshake, you know, you're looking at a $4 or $5 bill. Multiply that times six people in the family, or thereabouts, and you're looking at about $30. My wife and I, from time to time, will go to a place like Steak and Ale or some restaurant, you know, like a Red Lobster, maybe. And we sit down and we eat, just the two of us, you know, just two old people sitting there eating dinner. And it costs about $20 a plate, you know, in round numbers. You go to the Outback Steakhouse and order a steak, you know, and you're looking about $30 to $40 on the bill. Even when you go to the Olive Garden, you know, just the two of us, you know, it costs us $25, $30, doesn't it? I mean, you know, am I out of touch with reality here? Now, if you were to compare that with what you can buy in the way of pinto beans, wheat, maize, that's corn, or millet, or barley, or something else, and the food value that comes from those grains, rice, for instance, you know, for that same $30 that I spend over here at the Olive Garden, I could go down and buy a 100-pound sack of beans. They come in 50s. They're about 40 cents a pound here. I'm going to give you 50 cents a pound. That's 0.50 times 50, which is $25. $25. So for the $25, I can buy a 25-pound bag of pinto beans and feed 1 pound of dry beans per person per day. That would be enough to feed my wife and I for 12 and a half days on what one meal costs us at the Olive Garden, which is the cheap place to eat. Now, when you start multiplying that out, you know, we could do it for, if this family in Mali can do it for 8 cents, we can do it. If the family in Egypt can do it for 29 cents, so can we. Now, remember, this book comes from Baker Creek Seeds. Make sure you get a catalog from Baker Creek Seeds. Write this name and number down. It's called heirloomseeds.com, and that's number one, heirloomseeds.com for you on web. Otherwise, you can write or call, get it from information, and get the telephone number for Baker Creek Seeds in Mansfield, Missouri. Let's look for Mansfield, Missouri, Baker Creek Seeds. And you can get a copy of this Hungry Planet there, and whatever the price of it happens to be. Tell them you heard about it here on the Law Hour. And get a copy of it so that you'll have in front of you the exact foodstuffs that these people are actually buying. Now, here's the kicker. Because of world trade, the prices of foodstuffs now worldwide are virtually comparable. The price of rice in Japan and the price of rice in San Francisco, California is pretty compatible. And the poor guy in Mali is paying the same price, because if he doesn't, the people that have the rice are going to sell it wherever rice is selling and wherever it brings the best price. And rice is now a worldwide commodity. Same thing with corn. This is what destroyed the corn market in Mexico. It was the cheap, taxpayer-subsidized corn that we produce in the United States that destroyed the Mexican farm economy, which is why you've got all those poor people from Mexico trying to get into the United States to make a couple of bucks so that they can go back home and pay their bills. We kind of brought it on ourselves, if you want to know what the bald-faced truth is, but there's the story. Now listen, let's go back here to Yahoo News. Surging costs hit food security in the poorer nations. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization's Food Price Index, which includes grains, meat, dairy, and other items in 90 countries, was up 22% in March from a year earlier, though still below the 2008 levels. And in some Asian markets, rice and wheat prices are 20 to 70% above the 2008 levels, the UN reports. All right, now, tuck it away in your heart, because this is the first stage or the first leg up in famine, and that is prices go up, and the first people to be affected by this are the poor people, the poor. The guys in Mali are gonna take it in the shorts before the guys in San Francisco. All right, now, next, many governments blame dry weather and high fuel costs, but critics in countries such as India, Argentina, and Egypt say that misguided policies are making shortages worse. And then collusion by suppliers might be pushing up the prices. Well, you can rest assured that both of those scenarios are working in tandem. Now, I'm not going to change that, and neither are you. But be prepared for it, because here's what's coming. The price of food is going to double, and then it's going to double again, and then it's going to double again, and then it's going to double again. Now, there's a limit to how many times this thing can double. So let me give you an illustration. Let's suppose that the price of rice is 0.30, and let's suppose it doubles times 2 and moves it to 60 cents. So we take 2, and then that goes to $1.20. Times 2 is 240, 480, then 960, and then $19.20 a pound. So you can see what's going to happen here. The prices, when they double, they grow by what we call geometric progression, or they're growing by doubling instead of growing arithmetically. But there's a limit to where that's going to take us. At some point in time, the price gets to be so high you can't sell it, or it becomes so valuable that gold itself maybe is worth less than the pounds of rice. For instance, in 2 Kings chapter 6, let me give you an illustration here. Is it 2 Kings chapter 6? It came to pass after this that Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, gathered all of his host, and he went up and he besieged Samaria. There was a great famine in Samaria, and behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 40 pieces of silver. That's 80 ounces of silver for a donkey head, and the fourth part of a cab of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver. All right, now, a cab is 2 5/6, 2.56, let's just round it off to 3, it's 3 pints of dove's dung. Well, 3 pints is 6 cups, so you're going to get 5 pieces of silver. So let's take 5, divide that by 6 cups, and we're going to pay 83% of an ounce of silver. Now, last night, the price of silver was $18.37 times 0.83. That's $15.24 for a cup of dove's dung for you to eat. I'm not exaggerating here. I'm telling you, it's reported right here in 2 Kings chapter 6. This is dove manure, dove dung, dove feces, dove excrement, and was selling for $15.24 a cup. All right, now what do you think a cup of rice would be selling for? What do you think a cup of corn would be selling for? That's what extreme famine does. That's why you need to have a stockpile ahead of time, not after the Titanic hits the iceberg. You need to have a plan up front before the ship hits the iceberg. Before the famine takes hold, kids, let's make sure we got a plan in place. Now, I reported to you that we're already at a point where monoculture, soil destruction, and fiat paper currency, that's a lethal combination. Lethal. Our food supplies are down to 38 days. For you people living in the cities, you cannot comprehend the problem. That's what deception's done to you. And so let me describe the problem for you. When you plant a seed in the ground, it takes 120 days for that seed to mature. We can't plant until the 1st of May, because if we do, there's the risk that when the plant grows, it will be froze out with a frost anytime prior to May the 1st. It grows May, June, July, and August. And when we harvest the seed on the 1st of September, it's a full ear of corn. Now, if we were to plant another seed, we would have to have September, October, November, and December in order to get a second crop. And in most places, you can't do that because it's going to freeze in October or November. And therefore, before this corn can mature, it's going to freeze out. So you can only get one crop a year. In most places in the world, one crop is it. There are some exceptions to that rule, but you can forget the exceptions because that's exactly what they are. So you're only going to get payday once a year. The amount of corn that you harvest on the 1st of September has to last you until the 31st of August of the following year. Now, when I report to you that the world has a 38-day supply of food, what that means is that north and south of the equator, food is growing at opposite times of the seasons. In other words, today, it's summertime, or it's coming on to summertime here in the northern hemisphere, and it's coming on to wintertime in Australia. So you Aussies down there are going into a time when you're not going to be able to grow anything. And so you're going to rely upon those of us in the northern hemisphere to produce your cherries and stuff and fly them on a 747 down to Brisbane. Now, as long as this goes on and the world continues on the way it is, you're all right. But if, in fact, we have a breakdown in civilization, these food supplies that only total 38 days called just-in-time delivery, when they fail you, you're going to go hungry. You cannot live beyond 64 days without food. 64 days is about the limit. Now, you've only got a 38-day supply. There's 365 days in the year. So if you take a 38-day supply, you're 327 days short. Everybody in the world is 327 days of food short. I say that that's a disaster waiting to happen. I'm not going to sit by with a 38-day of supply of food in somebody else's warehouse. I wouldn't be satisfied with a 38-day supply of food in my own warehouse, much less somebody else's. So I want to pass that on to you. And that's what Hungry Planet should convey to your mind. We've got a big problem here, boys and girls, and it needs to be solved. And it's fairly easy to solve. And 40% of the people being interviewed here can solve the problem. And if they can solve it, you can solve it. Now, I bring that food supply 38 days to your attention because that's a killer. That, in combination with any one of the other 12 events called the signs of the times, mentioned in Matthew 24, can spell the end of civilization as we know it. This Carrington effect, all by itself, will do the trick. And that's because the entire world runs on electric. Everybody's got electric. Everything that we do is run by electricity. Carrington's EPM, or EMP, is going to knock out electric service worldwide. When that happens, we're going back to the Stone Age in short order. That's going to trigger such a god-awful massive famine worldwide as to defy description. That's why in Revelation 6, we see the fourth part of the earth dying from famine. Boys and girls, without electricity, you can't function. And the world with no electricity is coming on the horizon. And that's just one of the 12 problems. Just one. You got 12 problems here that need to be solved. Which is why I'm suggesting that you get after it and start by looking at this book called Hungry Planet. Well worth the $30. Now, no single factor explains the inflation gap between developing and developed countries, but poorer economies are more vulnerable to an array of problems that can push up prices, and many are cropping up this year. Farmers with less land and irrigation are hit harder by drought and floods. Civil war and other conflicts disrupt supplies. Prices in import-dependent economies spike up when the local currency weakens, as Pakistan's rupee did this year. Costs also have been pushed up by a rebound in global commodity prices, especially for soy destined for Asian consumption. That has prompted a shift in Argentina and elsewhere to produce more for export, which has led to local shortages of beef and other food. The global financial crisis hurt food production in some countries by making it harder for farmers to get credit for seed and supplies. In Mauritania in West Africa, rice prices doubled over the first 3 months of this year, according to the World Food Program. Over the same period, the price of corn rose 59% in Zimbabwe and 57% in neighboring Mozambique. In Kinshasa and in Democratic Republic of Congo, Mamie Munga pays $25 for a box of fish that cost $4 10 years ago. The price of a 25-kilogram bag of rice has doubled to $30. Now, today I'm obliged to buy half the food I used to buy mid-last year, said Mamie, a mother of five. Kinshasa shopkeeper Abadi Pateli said prices rise when the exchange rate of Congo's currency falls. But when our currency improves against the U.S. dollar, prices do not fall, he said. They remain steady. WFP spokesman Greg Barrow said poorer countries can suffer a ratchet effect that locks in price rises due to high transportation costs and limited competition. Prices dropped fairly dramatically toward the end of 2008 on international markets, but we found prices remained relatively high in many local markets in developing countries, said Barrow. So after the cost of food rises, it tends to take a long time to go down, he said. The FAO, Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, said that the double blow of the global recession and high food prices has pushed 100 million people into poverty. Opposition parties have organized protests in Pakistan. In Egypt, a 50% jump in meat prices in recent weeks has helped to fuel demonstrations outside Parliament over wages and other economic issues. I'm afraid that I will wake up one day and not be able to get enough bread for my 12-member family, said Abdullah Musa, a doorman at a Cairo apartment building. Now, people interviewed in a number of countries said that they're coping not just by cutting out expensive items, but by eating less. That is a trend that has stirred concern about malnutrition. In 2008, the inflation spike, the WPF found families in some countries skipped meals or switched to eating corn husks or other low-quality produce. Over the long term, this would lead to the effects of chronic malnutrition, Barrow said. It's expensive, so we eat less, said Seema Valmiki, 35, who is raising three children in New Delhi, India, with her husband on his 6,000 rupee, or $135 monthly income as a driver. Valmiki can no longer afford meat, fruit, or fish, and has put off buying her children new school uniforms, toys, and a bicycle. If we buy them fruit, we cannot buy them food, like rice, dal, and vegetables, she said. In China, the food costs rose 5.9% in April over a year ago. That's a modest rate for a country that suffered 20% plus inflation in 2008. But it was enough to prompt the communist government to try to reassure the public with pledges that prices will ease as the spring harvest comes in. Excuse me. Communist Party can guarantee that you're going to have a good harvest? I thought that was in the purview of God Almighty Himself. The Communist Party says, oh, we're going to have a good harvest. Sit back and relax. Boys and girls, I would suggest, in the light of Revelation chapter 6, that you not depend upon party politics, but that you depend upon your own good common sense. It also threatened to punish price gouging in a new effort to cool inflation. Even in moderately prosperous nations such as Venezuela, shoppers say they can no longer afford meat and scour the markets for bargains. In Argentina, soy production has taken over more than 32 million acres of grassland, which was once used to raise cattle and to replace the less profitable wheat and corn as well, driving up prices of wheat and corn in the supermarkets. Now, Argentina's government has responded with higher taxes, export limits, and controls on supermarket prices of wheat, meat, and corn, subsidies to food producers, and pay hikes of 30% for union workers. The moves have temporarily eased the pain, but beef producers have thinned their herds in response to the government's intervention, and the price of meat has doubled in the last year. So get used to it, boys and girls. The more government intervention that you have, the higher prices will go. And the more rationing you put into place, then the more you can stand in line to share the shortage. After all, it is the socialist way. Hey, we're out of time, so let me give you a final reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log, schedule, and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.